Hello, welcome to Grumpy Strategist episode 30. I'm your host, Michael Shoebridge, and I'm here with Strategic Analysis Australia's Head of Research, Dr. Marcus Hellyer. Marcus, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Michael.
So the sea breeze from the Indian Ocean here at Henderson is bracing, but it's a beautiful morning.
It's the Fremantle Docker coming in. It's balmy. It's very refreshing. We're here just trying to help defence work through the Henderson problem. I mean, how do you fit all of the stuff in here? SSNs, landing craft medium, landing craft heavy, general purpose frigate, ANZAC sustainment. There is just so much going on, but we're going to make it work, Michael, because we just have to make it work.
Well, we can do, people. So the first thing I've been doing is advising CivMec how to hide those, what were they, the offshore patrol vessels. They've got a whole bunch of steel cut up into various shapes.
Yeah, a little embarrassing, that ghost fleet there. Oops, that fleet that, oops, we don't really want anymore. So fortunately, it's a big shed. If you stick them down in the back corner, no one will notice and hopefully forget about them.
Well, that's part of it, but it's more complicated because to get this new Henderson precinct up, I mean, if it's going to be new, it's going to be state of the art, it's going to be leading edge, you've got to start with a blank canvas. So I've been working with the Bechtel boys who are doing the 3-year study, just looking at things like the footings, same at Austal. How easy is it to blow these things up and just remove them so you've got a clean piece of paper to work on? Look,
that CivMec shed's got to be 5 years old now. Just blow it up. Start all over again.
My initial finding is it's actually pretty easy to take down.
Okay.
So we should just say there are some exciting developments around Henderson and shipbuilding. So Austal is the winner for the landing craft heavy project, 3,900 ton ships, 8 of them, about 100 meters long. CivMec doesn't seem to be in this picture, and that's good because if I do destroy their shed, there won't be anywhere they could do that work.
Well, as always, let's take a step back. So we already knew, Michael, a year ago when the government announced the winner of the landing craft medium, that they foreshadowed that Austal, not only being the builder of the landing craft medium, would be the builder of the landing craft heavy. So landing craft medium, Burden Design, little Aussie battler company from the north coast of New South Wales, which has done huge things in the US. They were the designer of the landing craft medium, and the government said Austal's going to build it. And by the way, we'll just tell you now, we've got a strategic partner at Henderson. That's going to be Austal, so they will build the landing craft heavy. So what we've just learned is, who won the design for the landing craft heavy?
Wasn't it one of the bidders for the OPV, the Damen outfit?
It just goes to show there's always a second chance. So Damen, my Norwegian, Dutch is not so good.
But the European.
Yep. So they lost out on the OPV, the offshore patrol vessel. They were one of the final three, but didn't win the big prize. But they have been given a second chance, and they've been awarded the design of the landing craft heavy, which will be built by Austal.
Given the way the OPV program has gone, I think Damen were the winner by not getting that program. But anyway,
they might be sighing a deep sigh of relief, looking at Lursen, the German company that won, and saying, there, but by the grace of God go I. Because one of the things we've learned recently is Lursen seemed to have had enough of the Australian market. If we again go back in time, when they were picked as the winner of the OPV project, they were going to be the designer and use CivMec, a West Australian company that builds for the resource sector.
Yep.
This was their big entree into the vast and mighty Indo-Pacific market.
Yes, it was the front door.
And here we are sort of 6-7 years down the track, and they've said, we've had enough. We're actually selling everything to CivMec. They can finish the offshore patrol vessel by themselves. These great dreams have not materialized for them. And so they sort of join a long line of companies that have been burned working with the Australian Defence Department.
They've seen a bright, shiny future, and then they've lived the dream and got out of town as fast as they could.
I hope for their sake that it hasn't been as painful as Naval or Naval Group, the French company that was going to build our attack class submarines. But anyway, so there's a lot of moving pieces in Henderson. So Lursen is going, CivMec is taking over the OPV project. One of the things we also saw earlier this year is that Austal and CivMec put out a media release saying, we're working on a joint venture. We're going to have this joint venture to build the landing craft heavy. So this big project, sort of 3,500-ton landing craft made of steel. You would think CivMec has to be involved because Austal can't do it all themselves.
And CivMec do large-scale steel fabrication.
Correct. Yeah. And they have a huge facility in Henderson, state-of-the-art, though you seem to think we should demolish it, but that's a separate issue.
I've seen newer,
So, but yes, in this latest announcement by the government saying that Darman were getting the design and Austal were going to build it, no mention of CivMec. So there's a lot of unknowns around the whole commercial strategy of how these projects are going to go forward.
Well, I saw in the announcement there's this fascinating thing. Defence talks about keeping leverage over its commercial partners, but it doesn't seem to have kept any leverage in this case. So it was a year ago Austal were announced as the partner. But then with this announcement, choosing Darman and a particular design in Austal, they talk about it being subject to successful negotiations and effective performance. So they don't appear to have agreed anything.
It's an interesting commercial strategy where you essentially pick the two winners in advance and then say, okay, now we're going to talk price. Yeah. You've chucked all of your commercial leverage out the window.
So if I'm Austal or Darman, I'm thinking, well, I had a number in mind, but I've now got a bigger, different number in mind.
Mm. So, yeah, another interesting thing there. But there is some good news. The good news, of course, is that these ships are going to be built from steel. And, of course, not just any steel, but
Aussie steel.
Aussie steel. Because apparently Aussie steel keeps Australians safer, according to the media release.
Well, that's great news. I mean, if Australian steel does keep Aussies safer, you've just got to worry about Australian sailors who may not be inside Aussie steel on their particular platforms.
You mean like the general purpose frigates?
Could be. Well, that's just been formally down-selected now.
Yes, there was a major leak about 2 weeks ago with the results being spilled in the media, but we got the formal media release this morning. Who are the winners, Michael?
Well, we've got the Germans and the Japanese, so TKMS and Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. And I'd say at least one of those, both, are not Aussie steel. One could be German steel.
Oh, dear. The other what do they know about steel?
Japanese steel.
What do the Japanese know about steel?
Yeah, so the prospects are grim. Of course, the Henderson precinct will have to be rebuilt entirely before the build transfers there. So we really do have to get moving in blowing up that CivMec shed and Austal facility.
Yeah, so just to fill in our audience, who may not be as au fait as you are, Michael, the strategy is first three will be built off the shelf in the parent company's home yard, and then the design will transfer to Henderson. And so Henderson has to find room to build eight roughly 4,000 to 5,000 ton frigates. So it is literally all happening at Henderson. And again,
well, not yet.
Well, there's a bit of the first of the general purpose frigates to be built overseas meant to be delivered in 2029. You sort of figure the first Australian made one sometime by the early to mid 2030s, maybe 2033, but that's only 9 years away. So these things go, that's just around the corner.
You probably want the shipyard up and running 3 years before the first one to be able to set to work and start the construction.
Well, you know, and that's one of the big question marks is the whole thing meant to be built using existing facilities such as Austal and CivMec's existing facilities, or are we going to build something completely new? If so, who's going to own it? Is it going to be government owned like the submarine and surface shipyard in Adelaide at Osborne, or who knows? There are so many unknowns here.
Well, it'll take at least 3 years and hundreds of millions of dollars of studies to look at an answer to that question. I'd note that Bechtel, the company that's doing the study for Henderson, was in a bit of trouble with Northrop Grumman and the Pentagon about the very expensive over-engineered solutions they put in place for the silo renewals for the American nuclear weapon program. So hopefully they've learned some lessons out of that and can apply them. Now, speaking of lessons learned and self-assessment, the Defence Annual Report, everyone will have been reading this thing. It's a page-turner.
It is the high point of my year, Michael.
It does, despite Defence's best efforts, still have some numbers in it, though. And one thing I think you drew out of it is this acceleration that we've heard about, with particularly things like the missile programs that defense has got and with the helicopters, the Black Hawk. Well, what's the truth about the acceleration? Because these numbers can't lie, can they?
Well, so one of the sort of iron laws of project management is if you want to make progress, you actually have to spend money. Like, if you're not spending money, you're not getting capability. Of course, the reverse is not necessarily true. You can spend money and not get any capability. So we have lots of examples of that. But basically, if you want capability, you have to spend money. And there's a lot of projects that were meant to be spending money. And these are the kinds of projects that the government has said it was accelerating.
Well, one that I know of, LRASM. So that fantastically advanced anti-ship missile.
Yes, that the repeated governments have been repeatedly announcing since about 2020.
It was very exciting when it was announced back in 2020. And in fact, it was going to be acquired really fast.
Yes.
So I know they had about $333 million that they were going to spend when they put the 23-24 budget together. How much of that? They probably spent more because they've accelerated.
Well, partly correct. So they were planning on spending $333, and then they accelerated that up to $386.
Oh, when they did the additional estimates.
So they were going to accelerate it, but where we ended up was actually only $101.
Oh.
So we only spent less than a third of the amount of money we were planning to as part of this acceleration.
So it accelerated but only spent a third.
Acceleration's a vector, can go backwards, so we've sort of accelerated in a negative direction.
That's one missile. That'd be better news, because there was the other big program was JASSM extended range. So
the long-range land strike missile. Well, that was meant to be spending $180 million.
Now, that's a hot production line, so if you want to accelerate that, the prospects are good. How did they go?
28
missiles?
No, 28 million.
28 million?
Yeah.
But
so about a 1/6 of what they were hoping to spend.
Okay. Well, that, you know, by any measure, that's disappointing acceleration.
Well, it is kind of disappointing. And I think it reinforces that point we've made a number of times. That is, we are completely dependent on US production lines for this stuff. And if the US figures that somebody else's need is greater, whether their own or another ally's, then we kind of miss out.
Well, I think both those, LRASM and JASSM-ER, the production line is hot. It's popping missiles out, but you're right, they're just not going to the Australian customer. We're already seeing that problem with relying on global supply.
Yes, and there's another off-the-shelf purchase from the US that is accelerating in the wrong direction. That's one we've spoken about before. That's the Black Hawk. Our listeners will recall that we retired the MRH-90 in a hurry, but Defence Minister Miles said, don't you worry about that. I'm on the phone to my counterpart in the US and we're going to accelerate delivery of the Black Hawks.
I think he may even have raised it face-to-face with Lloyd Austin because it was that important.
Yep.
So on the cash flow, they had $642 million that they planned to spend in 23-24. How much more did they spend than that?
They spent slightly less, in fact, less than half. So 288. So they planned 642, tried to accelerate, not very successfully, and ended up spending 288.
You know what's happening with these Black Hawks? An American colleague got in touch about the Black Hawks and said, so I see your delivery timeline is between now, 2024 and 2030, for these 40 aircraft. You realize in 2030, that's when the US Army starts to retire its Black Hawk fleet because they're going to the new tilt rotor aircraft. So you're getting in on the back end of this helicopter. You know that, don't you?
Well, you don't want to pursue new technology.
So we're accelerating into the past with the Black Hawks.
Well, but despite all of this, the other thing we learn from the Defence Annual Report is Defence's assessment of its own performance. And it gets to mark itself.
Well, but these are clear-eyed people with a hard-edged grasp of reality, as shown by the acceleration of these programs. When they want to do something, they bloody get it done.
Yeah.
So on workforce, now they're about 5,000 ADF people short of where they're meant to have been. That's 8 years of failure.
Mm-hmm.
How does the annual report assess their own performance on workforce?
Okay, so the task is, quote, invest in defence people. Defence is able to attract and retain an ADF and APS workforce with the necessary culture, skills and capabilities to contribute to Australia's national interests. And as you point out, they're currently 5,000 people short of where they need to be in the ADF.
So they're not doing well.
So their self-assessment is partially achieved. Just as context, generally defence gives itself an achieved. Okay, so I'd say for about 90%+ of these targets, they give themselves an achieved. So here they have fallen short.
But I think partially is right. Okay, so sure, in enlisted ranks and junior officers, they may be well short. But I think where they've not just achieved, they have exceeded best practice.
You're getting at star-ranked officers, Michael.
Star-ranked officers.
I think they have massively overachieved here, yes. They've done very well.
Aren't there about 238 star-ranked, as in senior officers, in the Australian military across the three services?
Yes, what's your point?
And the Major General level, which is the two-star level, there are about, I think, 24 in the Army, 16 in the Navy, 16 in the Air Force. These people are on salaries, just salaries. Forget the free healthcare, dental care, cheap housing loans, deployment allowance, accommodation allowance. They're on somewhere between $446,000 and $528,000 a year. And I think this really shows Defence's remuneration and retention strategy is really working for their most senior hierarchy, because they're not just retaining them, they're growing them. And it shows that sense of service is really helped out when you paid $500,000 per annum.
So, but they've only partially achieved. I mean, I do have to say, how much do you have to miss your target by to get a not achieved? So 5,000 is short is partially achieved. What do you have to come in 10,000 short to get not achieved? I'm not quite sure there. But another area where they have achieved, if we can go back to capability, so we notice that not a lot of acceleration happening there. Nevertheless, the task is defence is delivering the right future capability at the right time within the integrated investment program. Blah 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 blah. That is achieved. Right. I have to say that is a very generous assessment, considering we no longer have 10 years of warning time, but all of the big stuff, such as frigates and SSNs, are not arriving for another 10 years. I find it a little hard to understand how you can assess yourself as delivering the right future capability at the right time.
You know, I would say the key word there is future, because it's about future delivery. It's not about their actual performance now. So it's a self-assessment that in the distant future, they will be delivering the right capability. It's not about now, Marcus.
It certainly isn't about now. And there's one other number here that I thought was quite interesting. So to advance Australia's prosperity, we, the royal we, have contributed $29.41 billion to the economy.
Wow.
So out of the $55.7 billion that we, the taxpayers,
yes,
give you, the Department of Defence, they've put $29 billion back into the Australian economy.
And this report is from the Secretary and the Chief of the Defence Force. So they see themselves as personally responsible for giving $29 billion back into the economy, even though they were given 55 and the rest went somewhere
else. Yes, the missing roughly $26 billion has gone overseas.
And as far as them contributing, it's actually all Australian taxpayer money. Yep. So it's not their contribution.
It is not their money. It's actually our money. But anyway. And one other number we learned. So our listeners might recall I've sort of nagged Defence to get the now approved budget for the Hunter program, C-5000, the future.
Well, they couldn't tell you. It's commercially very sensitive.
Couldn't give us a number. But
the number has popped out in the public annual report.
The number has popped out in the annual report. So this is the approved budget for the design phase plus the construction of the first three Hunter frigates.
You had some crazy estimate. It was going to cost about $9 billion for each of these three ships.
It's crazy.
How wrong were you?
Not much.
Well, what's the actual figure?
The actual figure is $27.1 billion.
Right, so you were $0.1 billion out.
I'm incompetent. Yes, so we are spending $27 billion for three ships. I mean, You know, I know I may sort of at times come across as a bit of a hater of the Hunter class frigate program, but 9 billion a ship just strikes me as ludicrous.
Well, particularly ludicrous. When the previous most expensive ship we had was the Hobart class, and that was 3 for 9 billion.
It came in about 8 billion, so it was even less than 3 billion.
3 for 8 billion. 3 for 27 billion.
Yeah.
That's remarkable. But construction has now started, hasn't it? So last year they spent about 1.68 billion, but construction hasn't started. So now they're construction.
1.068 billion. So a bit over $1 billion.
A bit over $1 billion last year, but that was before construction started. Yeah. Now construction has started. How much are they planning to get out the door? Because that'll be ramping up fast because they're accelerating this.
745.
More than they spent. So that'd be
1.7. No, 745. So they're actually spending less. Now we're actually cutting steel, then presumably we have welders and hardworking men and women actually building ships. So I don't know what it means, but normally when you look at projects, you know, spending ramps up once you actually start construction, but yeah, doesn't seem to be occurring here.
As we're seeing with so many of these activities, there's so much being spent on studies, paper, documents, announcements. When you actually start doing the work, you start saving some money, is what the Hunter's showing.
Well, it is the world's most advanced automated shipyard, apparently, so who knows. But look, to all of the haters, you know, of the Hunter frigate program, I've heard people say it is the most expensive surface combatant ever made.
Pound for pound.
It is. That is just ludicrous.
In metric, kilogram for kilogram. Yeah.
If you look at the Zumwalt destroyer, in the US, that's 31 US billion for three ships. So that's about 45, 46. So that's coming in at about 15 billion Australian. So look, come on, we're not even close to the most ludicrously failed shipbuilding project in the history of the world.
Yeah, but I think we're on the curve. And if we've gone up from 8 billion for three to 27 billion for three, I think we can out-Zumwalt those Americans with the next program.
Well, there's still a lot of water to flow under the bridge, Michael. A lot of cash to flow under the bridge. So,
well, that's one spend figure. Do you have a spend figure for DEF 1? The nuclear submarine.
Well, yeah. Okay, so one thing, I published a piece on the SAA website. You know, that's called cross-promotion, Michael. You see, I'm very good at marketing here.
That website again?
Strategic Analysis Australia.
.org.
Yeah. So we put up a piece essentially looking at where is the money going. So sort of looking at that issue we just spoke about, you know, where's the $55.7 billion going? Obviously not to Australian SMEs. If you look at the list of the top 30 projects that comes out in the portfolio budget statement and you sort of rank them from biggest plan spend for 24-25, rank them, pretty much the top 15 roughly are all pretty much going off the shelf, overseas money.
Yeah.
So, and some, however, there's a few in there which are local construction of overseas design, and some of them are armored vehicle projects. And one of the things I found quite interesting when you add all of them up is that, contrary to this sort of perceived wisdom that poor old army is... Yeah,
the strategic review took a chainsaw to the
army. They've missed out. They're always the poor sister, you know, Cinderella who misses out.
Yep.
Actually, if you add up the numbers, so if you look at infantry fighting vehicles, you look at Boxer combat reconnaissance vehicle, the tank project, self-propelled howitzers, HIMARS, the rocket launcher, and upgrades to protected vehicles, you come in pretty close to $2.5 billion just being spent in 24-25. So
that is a massive capital spend.
Is a massive capital spend. Now, you know, the grumpy people might say, yeah, but these were all projects started back in the era of Plan Beersheba when the army had a different role and different structure. But be it as it may, there is a lot of investment occurring in armoured vehicles.
Although you're right, I would say it's delivering the army of the past today.
Well, you would say that because you're a hater, Michael, particularly of tanks.
No, I'm just looking at how wars are being fought. But yeah, so that the rubber band of army investment is still got plenty of oomph in it on those numbers.
Yes, but I think the interesting thing about this is you look at all of those armored vehicle projects, close to $2.5 billion just in one year. It's still less than DEF 1. So DEF 1 is the name that defense has given to the nuclear-powered submarine project.
It is the Death Star of the Australian investment program.
Yes, yeah. It is the Death Star. And it's $2.5 billion just in 2024-25, and we've still got about 8 years to go before we get the first of those vessels. And that number will continue to ramp up. I suspect by around about the early 2030s, we could be actually spending in the order of $10 billion a year.
It's like the sumo wrestler that's going to sit on the rest of the budget, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. So, and pretty much all of that money is going overseas. You know, we keep hearing from Australian medium and small companies in the defence sector that they're starving,
mm-hmm.
despite the government saying we are spending historic amounts of money. But yes, when you look at the big dollars, they are all going overseas. You know, there is some money being spent here to assemble all of those overseas designs and overseas components, but pretty much the bulk of it is going directly overseas.
Yeah, one other thing we learned about the nuclear submarine program is the American Get Well program is not going well. Mm. So the head of that submarine production program said recently that he had to tell people that their annual production target was 1.5 boats a year.
So what do we need to get to?
Need to get to 2.33 by about 2029.
Mm-hmm. US submarine program.
The US submarine production attack submarines had to get from its current 1.1 to 1.2 boats a year to 2.33. That meant this year it had to get to 1.5.
And where's it going to end up?
About 1.1 to 1.2, maybe 1.3.
So essentially a whole boat short of where we need to be.
Yes, yes. And so, and I suppose the problem is it's a bit like a defibrillator, isn't it? So they've put the industrial uplift spend in.
Well, Australia has injected $4.5 billion.
But unfortunately, the body's still not moving. So the production rate isn't lifting. But the good news is we're told, don't worry, still very confident we're going to achieve that 2.33. The only thing that worries me is there's no grounds for that confidence when you look at the performance.
Mm.
But there is great optimism in one part of the globe, and that's the Houthis, with the Americans very, very impressed with what the Houthis are doing, very impressed with how quickly they're doing things, and incredibly impressed with their ability to produce powerful missiles and drones.
Well, Michael, as you know, you can't just build guided weapons just like that. You need a crawl, walk, run approach.
Well, I'm confident that in 10 years, if we keep crawling, some Australian company somewhere might be able to make a component for a missile.
See, if only the Houthis had listened to our guided weapons enterprise.
The Houthis just are not doing this properly, and that's why they're not achieving any results. Have you got a quote from
know what he's talking about.
Yep.
Dr. William LaPlante, currently Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition. So he is the acquisition head honcho in the US, and he apparently said, I'm a physicist. So he's a doctor and a physicist, so he must know what he's talking about.
Yeah, I'm a little anti-vax, so I'm a bit doubtful about him as a doctor.
And an engineer. This guy has a lot of qualifications. Yep. So. And I've been around missiles most of my career. And what the Houthis have done in the last 6 years, last 6 months.
Last 6 months.
I'm just shocked. I'll tell you what. You know why he's shocked?
Why is he shocked?
The Houthis are getting scary. They now have anti-ship ballistic missile capabilities that are long range and can do things that are just amazing. He's a total fanboy. But you have this group producing thousands of ballistic missiles that, I'll just say, can do technical things that only the advanced countries could do. And they're producing them at some degree of scale. It's just remarkable. So obviously, these foolish Houthis have not gotten the mail that you got to have a crawl, walk, run strategy if you want to make GWEO. Because they're just running, the poor fools. The poor fools.
Well, and they're doing this after having a really destructive civil war where they had the UAE and the Saudis fighting them, and after being bombed by the Americans, including with B-2 bombers, and fighting the US Navy. And a previous American admiral had said the American Navy is fighting the largest naval battle since World War II fighting the Houthis. So They're fighting the largest naval battle against the American Navy. They're being bombed by B-2s. They're in a war-ravaged economy, and they're able to produce really effective, technologically advanced anti-ship ballistic missiles. That does tell me that maybe Australia can do more than what the current government and Defence Department's plan tells us.
I think we could do more. Yeah, well, apparently Dr. LaPlante thinks we can do things in 6 months, so I'm still struggling to work out why it's taking us 10 years. But anyway, Dr. LaPlante also says a one-way UAV is bad, but you have a ballistic missile hit a surface combatant, that's a very bad day. Well, at least the Germans got that in intel.
Well, that's good, because the Germans are one of the contenders for the general-purpose frigate. So have they adapted their ship design to deal with the Houthis?
Well, so they had a frigate that was out in the Indo-Pacific. It's it's the cool place to be now. Yep. The Italians have been out here. The British have been out here. Yep. The Germans have been out here. And so they had a frigate with an oiler out here, and they were heading home, and then they went, oh, we got to go through the Red Sea. That's where the Houthis are.
Well, actually, before they headed home, they told those Chinese what for, didn't they? They did a passage through the Taiwan Strait.
They did do a passage through the Taiwan Strait.
So they're willing to step up into a dangerous part of the planet.
They stared the Chinese down.
Stared the PLA down,
yes, but apparently going through the Red Sea, the short way home, was a little too risky. So
after staring the PLA down, they didn't think they could take on the Houthis.
Well, apparently. So a German Ministry of Defence spokesperson noted that the Baden-Württemberg, that's the name of this frigate, though formidable in conflict prevention. Sorry, I do have to love formidable in conflict prevention and stabilization operations. What does that mean? It means it doesn't actually have any real capability. So although formidable in conflict prevention and stabilization operations, is not able to provide an air defense umbrella for extended self-defense against air-breathing threats, i.e. cruise missiles, and to efficiently protect the supply vessel which is in company. So this frigate, which is only 5 years old, it's not a relic from a different age, couldn't protect itself against the aforementioned Houthis, these foolish people who have forgotten they need to crawl, walk, run.
To me, what the Germans are saying is it's not a warship, because if it's formidable in conflict prevention, that means if there isn't a war, and it's formidable in stabilization operations, which normally happen after a war, the only thing that it's not capable of doing is fighting effectively in a war. Mm-hmm. So that does make me wonder about the level of capability that we're going to get with our general purpose
frigate. Well, look,
frigate.
So just so we don't get sued by TKMS, Michael, I will point out that the Baden-Württemberg is not the same design as the Miko 200.
I wasn't making it a TKMS point. I was making it a,
I'm just saying,
what is the general purpose frigate's capability going to be,
well,
regardless of who wins?
It will be better than the Baden-Württemberg.
Well,
apparently
I'm sure
the Baden-Württemberg only has C-RAM, which is a very short-range air defence missile. Doesn't even have the Evolved Sea Sparrow, which is kind of what we want on our ship. So the TKMS design, I think, will have greater air defence capability.
No, I'm sure the Megumi will too, but I just hope they're better than formidable in conflict prevention.
Yes. It's so what does that say, really, when here you have a major surface combatant which has decided it's too risky to go through the Red Sea. We want to keep merchant ship going through there. We want to keep that sea lane open. To me, that says you have failed. Mm-hmm. You know, the US and its allies have failed at keeping that sea line of communication open, which, of course, raises that question of, well, what are the 50 SSNs that the US Navy have good for? We keep hearing here from senior officials here that we're getting SSNs to protect sea lanes of communication, yet 50 SSNs can't keep that one open to the point that
a German warship
is too scared to go through there.
Anyway, well, I'm not sure that there's good news to end this on, although I suppose the one good thing is hypersonics have been accelerated again. So it was only 2022 that the Defence Science and Technology Group with then Minister Peter Dutton, told us they were supercharging hypersonic development and research. They'd signed a new agreement with the Americans.
Supercharging it. So we're putting the supercharger on a hypersonic.
Yep, supercharging with a new hypersonic precinct.
Does that make it gigacharged? Gigasonic?
Well, it was supercharged, but I think superchargers don't work well in hypersonics, and that's why 2 years on, we've got a new accelerification announcement about hypersonics from the same people that brought us that 2022 announcement. What are they accelerating now, Marcus? Is it a new agreement again?
They're accelerating the use of the word accelerate, because just in this media release, I can see it used five times. So we're accelerating delivery of AUKUS Pillar 2 hypersonic systems. We have signed an agreement to accelerate the testing of hypersonic vehicles and related technology. So we're accelerating testing.
Yep.
We are going to accelerate development, testing, and evaluation of innovative hypersonic systems. We're going to do some flight tests, which will accelerate the development of hypersonic concepts. So we're going to accelerate some concepts and critical enabling technologies. And this agreement will accelerate Australia's sovereign ability to develop and deliver offensive and defensive hypersonic technologies.
Ooh.
The bit I don't see being accelerated here is an actual hypersonic missile.
Any in-service actual weapon.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a lot here about testing, a lot here about concepts, technologies, but actually putting all of that stuff together in something that resembles a missile seems, again, that might be, I'm not sure if that's the walk or the run phase. This seems to be crawl phase still.
Yeah, I think this is embarrassing. You know, the supercharging in 2022, the accelerating in 2024, this is decades of research and development, and there's still nothing.
So I'm just wondering,
hypersonics are an empty vessel when it comes to defence science and technology.
I'm just wondering, when we advertise for senior defence executives, do those ads run in the Yemen?
Partner with the Houthis. Good thought. Good thought.
Some Houthis taking over our GUIO program might actually speed things up a little.
Yeah. Well, once they completely close the Red Sea, they'll have time on their hands. Good thought. Let's get sell them out to Henderson.
All right, I'm about to accelerate off to get some lunch, I think.
Yep, me too. All right, great to talk with you, Marcus.
All right, see you, Michael.